While she made us hot cornmeal cereal, toast, or pancakes, she'd complain about having nothing to live for and how she'd rather be dead. Those were the good mornings. The really awful mornings were the ones when she'd talk about how she was going to kill herself that day. I remember how terrified I felt, wondering what would happen to us if my mother killed herself. Who'd take care of us? Father was gone nearly all the time. One morning I asked my mother, "Mama, if a mother dies, what will happen to her children? Who will take care of them?" Mother was very matter-of-fact in responding to me. "Oh, the children will be all right. The priesthood will give their father a new wife. The new wife will take care of them." By this time, I was about 6. I looked at her and said, "Mama, I think that Dad better hurry up and get a new wife." I was beginning to notice other things about the world around me. One was that some of the women we'd see in the community when we went shopping were wearing dark sunglasses. I was surprised when a woman took her glasses off in the grocery store and I could see that both her eyes were blackened. I asked my mother what was wrong, but the question seemed to make her uncomfortable, and she didn't answer me. My curiosity was piqued, however, and every time I saw a woman in dark glasses, I stared at her to see if they were covering strange, mottled bruises. What I did love about my mother was her beauty. In my eyes, she was gorgeous. She dressed with pride and care. Everyone in the community thought she was an exceptional mother. But that was the public facade. In private, my mother was depressed and volatile. She beat us every day. The range was anything from several small swats on the behind to a lengthy whipping with a belt. Once the beating was so bad I had bruises all over my back and my legs for more than a week. When she hit us, she accused us of always doing things to try to make her miserable. I feared her, but my fear made me a student of her behavior. I watched her closely and realized that even though she slapped us throughout the day, she never spanked us more than once a day. The morning swats were never that intense or prolonged. The real danger came in late afternoon, when she was in the depths of her sorrow. My father criticized her constantly. The house was never clean enough, her children never well-mannered enough. Even after her babies, mother was still thin, but my father felt she wasn't thin enough. My grandmother Jenny was one of the buffers between us and our mother's volatility. She came over almost every day and helped care for us. I remember sitting in her lap for hours as she told me stories about the Old West and the Southern states before the Civil War. Grandma's husband had died when my mother was 2 years old. My grandmother, who came from polygamist bloodlines, then was married to an apostle in the FLDS and became part of a plural marriage for the first time. She believed plural marriage was the most sacred aspect of our faith and told me story after story about how the Mormon Church had been the Church of God until it abandoned polygamy. She told me with great pride that her great-grandfather, Benjamin F. Johnson, was one of the first men that the prophet Joseph Smith introduced to the holy principle of celestial marriage in the 19th century. The principle of celestial marriage is what defines the FLDS faith. A man must have multiple wives if he expects to do well in heaven, where he can eventually become a god and wind up with his own planet. A man has spirit wives in heaven, where he fathers spirit children. Becoming a spirit child is the first step on the journey in coming to Earth. We also held fast to the belief that our father was once a spirit and then came to Earth to get a body and try to prove that he is worthy enough to become a god. Grandma said that the prophet had to be very careful about who he shared this information with because several men had turned against him when he introduced them to this holy covenant of marriage.